I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. It's the last days of campaigning for Kamala Harris and Donald Trump leading up to Tuesday's Election Day, AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
On the final Sunday of a roller coaster presidential contest, Republican Donald Trump asking voters in Pennsylvania to again make him leader of what he calls a failed nation, while unleashing a profane, conspiracy-laden rant asserting U.S. elections are not legitimate.
It's a crooked country, and we're going to make it straight. We're going to make it straight, and it's not an easy thing to do. They'll want to put you in jail because you want to make it straight.
Democrat Kamala Harris at a Michigan church saying God offers America what she calls a divine plan strong enough to heal division.
What kind of country do we want for our children and our grandchildren? A country of chaos, fear, and hate, or a country of freedom, justice, and compassion.
The candidates continue crisscrossing the country, especially swing states, as the clock ticks down to Election Day. I'm Julie Walker.
Moldovan election officials say pro-Western President Maia Sandu has won a second term in office in a pivotal presidential runoff against a Russia-friendly opponent in a race that was overshadowed by claims of Russian interference, voter fraud, and intimidation in the European Union candidate country. The Central Electoral Commission said with nearly 98% of votes counted in the second round of the presidential race held Sunday, Sandu had obtained 54% of the total votes, compared to 46% for Alexander Stoyanoglo, a former prosecutor general who was backed by the pro-Russia, the Party of Socialists. Sandu obtained 42% of the ballot in October's first round of voting, but failed to win an outright majority. This is VOA News. A suspected leak of classified Gaza documents involving an aide to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has jolted Israeli politics and outraged the families of hostages held by Hamas. Reuters correspondent Emma Jaleh reports.
A court ruling partially lifting a gag order has provided an initial glimpse of the case, which the court said had compromised security sources and may have harmed Israel's efforts to release the hostages. On Friday, the magistrate's court confirmed that a number of suspects had been arrested as part of a probe into a suspected, quote, security breach caused by the illegal provision of classified information. Details from the document in question were published by Germany's Bild newspaper in September, according to Israeli newspaper Haaretz, one of the media outlets that had appealed to the court to lift the gag order. The article in question was published days after six Israeli hostages were found executed in a tunnel in southern Gaza. Their killing sparked mass protests in Israel and from outraged hostage families who accused Netanyahu of torpedoing the ceasefire talks for political reasons. On Sunday, the court ordered one suspect to be released while keeping others in remand, according to Israeli Channel 13 News.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaleh. Protests erupted on Sunday as Spain's King Felipe visited a suburb in Valencia badly hit by last week's deadly floods that killed more than 200 people. Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones reports.
Residents of Pai Porta shouted murderers at the King and Queen, as well as Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. People hurled mud and other objects at them, venting pent-up anger over what they believe were poor handling by the authorities of last Tuesday's storm and flooding. Residents are furious at the authorities, accusing them of sending late warnings about the dangers of the storm and floods. They also say emergency services responded slowly after disaster struck. The central government has said issuing alerts to the population is the responsibility of regional authorities.
Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones. Health officials say mpox cases in the Democratic Republic of Congo appear to be stabilizing. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
It may be a possible sign that the main epidemic, for which the World Health Organization made a global emergency declaration in August, might be on the decline. In recent weeks, Congo has reported about 200 to 300 lab-confirmed mpox cases every week, according to the WHO. That's down from nearly 400 cases a week in July. I'm Karen Chamas.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 4th, Election Day Eve here in the United States. And here are some of the stories we are covering. What would the U.S. election results mean for Africa?
Whatever decision they make, it's going to determine the future for not only America, but the rest of the world.
We'll have profiles of Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Meanwhile, the two candidates brace for legal battles if there's no clear winner on election night. A Kenyan American runs for District 38A of the Minnesota House of Representatives as a Democrat. Botswana's opposition explains how it defeated a party that has ruled the country for 58 years.
The reasons why we won as big as we did was because our message resonated with the lived realities of our people.
Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Republicans will vote tomorrow, Tuesday, to elect the new occupant of the White House. The presidential race between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump is so tight that their teams are on alert for the legal battles that might ensue to define the election's outcome. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias explains.
Earlier this year, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump told several media outlets that if the results of the November 5th presidential election are, quote, honest, fair, and free, he would accept them. Election officials are confident the voting process will be fair, secure, and transparent. But the former president has increasingly voiced concern about his opponents possibly committing fraud.
If we can keep that cheating down, because there are a bunch of cheats, if we can keep that cheating down, we're going to have a tremendous victory.
During an interview that aired last month on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, Vice President Kamala Harris told NBC News' anchor Hallie Jackson that her team will be ready to go if Trump loses and attempts to subvert the election.
We will deal with election night and the days after as they come, and we have the resources and the expertise and the focus on that as well.
The Republican National Committee has in place a so-called election integrity program in battleground states. Its lawyers have filed more than 100 lawsuits over perceived voting rules irregularities, but many have been shut down in court. Democrats have launched their own legal efforts, including suing to prevent potential delays in the certification of Georgia's state election results. In tight presidential races such as this year's, legal battles are expected. Most of them will be fought in swing states, analysts predict. Democracy analyst with the Bipartisan Policy Center, Michael Thorning, via Skype.
At the polling place, we often see contests over whether or not ballots are being handled properly. In the post-election day period, there are disputes about whether or not individual voters are actually eligible and whether they're provisional ballots should be cast and counted.
Anyone who claims fraud, however, must present proof, legal experts warn. Former Pennsylvania judge Robert Gracie is a practicing attorney and member of the nonpartisan organization Keep Our Republic. He spoke via Skype.
Lawyers, be careful what you allege. Make sure that you can prove it. Otherwise, they may be subject to discipline, as we've seen growing out of the 2020 challenges.
Trump's former lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, for instance, was disbarred for spreading baseless claims that the 2020 election was stolen. The legal battles could delay the outcome of the presidential election. But if on Tuesday night the results are clearly in favor of one presidential nominee over another by some noteworthy margin, analysts say it will be much harder for the opposing party to contest those results. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
In this episode of the Candidates VOA series on the 2024 presidential election, we look at former and perhaps future President Donald Trump. In just over 9 years, he has thumbed his nose at the establishment, reshaped the Republican Party in his own image, and further polarized an already divided country. VOA's Tina Trin explores Trump's attempt at a historical political comeback.
The Fox News Decision Desk can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden
has been elected President of the United States.
It was supposed to be the end, but when the end came, Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States, wasn't ready to admit defeat.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us.
Trump urged supporters to prevent Congress from certifying those results on January 6, 2021.
We fight like hell, and if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
What resulted was a scene previously unimaginable in America that led to his second impeachment. Trump's unwillingness to take no for an answer was on brand for a man who has always burned convention.
I think what you see is somebody who has incredible confidence in his own intuition.
Russ Mutner and Suzanne Craig are New York Times investigative reporters and co-authors of Lucky Loser, an unflattering look at how Trump fashioned himself into a self-made billionaire.
He has not, since the early 80s, really trusted people who have subject area expertise in almost anything. He will always overrule them to make things the way he wants them to turn out.
Trump's buildings were emblazoned with his name in large gold letters, a brash display of his ambition and self-promotion.
He was worth $200 million when he would talk. It was the interview he gave to the New York Times, and that grew to $1 billion when he was talking to 60 Minutes a decade later.
Trump excelled at drawing attention and cultivating a brand for himself as a dealmaker. He made millions licensing his name. But behind the success were troubles. His companies filed for bankruptcy 6 times. His casinos lost money and were shuttered. Trump rebounded with his TV show, The Apprentice, which led to his biggest role yet.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am officially running for President of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again.
Unapologetic and unfiltered, Trump was a polarizing nationalist candidate.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
As president, Trump appointed 3 Supreme Court justices who helped overturn federal abortion rights.
The U.S. death toll now above 150,000.
In early 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic tested Trump. He fast-tracked the development of life-saving vaccines, but he also appeared to suggest that scientists study injecting bleach to kill the virus. With over 9 million Americans infected and a death toll exceeding 230,000, voters that November chose Joe Biden as their next president. Out of office, Trump faced multiple criminal indictments and is the first former president to be a convicted felon. And yet, he's never been more popular than he is now. Surviving 2 assassination attempts this year has only strengthened the bond between him and his supporters.
God has a plan for Trump, and he absolutely was spared for some purpose and reason, and hopefully it's to become the 47th president.
American politics has never been the same since Donald Trump entered the field. And the man who once co-authored The Art of the Comeback may now be engineering one of the biggest in American history. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Emerging from one of the most diverse liberal regions of the U.S., Kamala Harris, the Democratic candidate for president, has navigated a course between tough enforcer of the law and forward-thinking reformer. VOA's Matt Dibble has this profile from Oakland, California.
My mother was a brilliant, 5-foot-tall, brown woman with an accent.
Born in 1964, Kamala Harris's story begins in the diverse and progressive neighborhoods of the San Francisco Bay Area. Her immigrant parents, Shyamala Gopalan from India and Donald Harris from Jamaica, met in Berkeley, California, where the 2 gifted graduate students arrived to study at the University of California.
Here it is to give you a message of hope.
1960s Berkeley was a center of civil rights and peace activism. Harris has said her earliest memories are of being taken to rallies in a stroller. By 1970, the Harris's marriage had ended. Shyamala Gopalan, with her 2 daughters, found an apartment to rent in an area of Berkeley known as the Flatlands.
So they lived above
the daycare center above Shelton's daycare. I had a modest two-bedroom, one-bath apartment.
Childhood friend Carol Porter first met Harris at the school bus stop.
We were the second class to desegregate Berkeley Public Schools.
Harris went on to Howard University, a historically black college, and then law school. At a time when record levels of black men were incarcerated in California, she took a job as a prosecutor, a role often viewed negatively in the African-American community.
She wanted to go in and change things so that people weren't being prosecuted the way that they were based on systemic and structural racism.
In 2002, Harris took on the incumbent in a race for San Francisco district attorney.
There had never been a woman district attorney. She was really an underdog. But from the beginning, she had something very special.
Harris won the close race and set to work increasing convictions and prison time for violent offenders while steering those convicted of first-time nonviolent crimes into her rehabilitation program called Back on Track. Elected Attorney General of California in 2010, she pressured U.S. banks into a $20 billion settlement over deceptive lending practices, took on the cross-border drug trade and human traffickers, and advocated for marriage equality. In 2016, Harris was elected to the U.S. Senate, where she quickly rose as a powerful voice on issues of immigration, health care, and criminal justice reform. Known for her sharp questioning during hearings and her ability to hold powerful leaders accountable, Harris became a prominent figure on the national stage. But in a 2020 run for president, Harris's campaign struggled to find direction amid staff chaos.
There's definitely been stories about high staff turnover, inability to keep talented people in her orbit.
Biden won the nomination and ultimately asked Harris to join the ticket as his vice president. The two went on to victory, making her the first woman and the first person of color to win that office. Faced with a surge of migrants attempting to cross the U.S. southern border, Vice President Harris engaged with regional leaders to address instability and poverty. She quickly became a political target.
She was supposed to be the one that was in charge of securing our border, and I don't even know if she's been down there yet.
Harris has grown more comfortable serving as an emissary on the world stage, emphasizing support and soothing tensions. And in a career defined by breaking barriers and exceeding expectations, Harris rose again, becoming the Democratic nominee for president when Joe Biden unexpectedly dropped out of the race. Matt Dibble, VOA News, Oakland, California.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 4th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This programming note, VOA will bring you a special Daybreak Africa U.S. election show on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday beginning at 4 hours UTC. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. VOA's Abdul Shakur Abu is in the state of Minnesota covering the election. He spoke with Kenyan-American Huda Hessler, who is running for District 38A of the Minnesota House of Representatives on the Democratic Party ticket. If she wins, she will become the first Kenyan-born immigrant to be elected to any state legislature in the United States.
I am Huda Hiltzley. I'm running for Minnesota House of Representatives here in Minnesota Senate District 38A, and I am a proud product of this community. I've grown up here for the last 20-plus years, but my true love is my community, and thus I am running for Minnesota House of Representatives.
Having come from East Africa and now in the U.S., how different is it running from office here, and what are the challenges?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, I came here when I was 9 years old. So I've grown up here. But I do pay attention on, you know, how politics are ran in Kenya and East Africa in general. And honestly, the biggest difference between, you know, running here in the U.S. and in Kenya is how the candidates approach, the voters, right? You know, Kenya, we know how it is. It's a matter of, unfortunately, you know, buying votes. And that's something that, you know, Kenya has to work on and has to address. But here in the U.S., it's completely the opposite. You have to go to the candidate. I mean, you have to go to the voters where they are and ask them for your support. And that means literally going door to door, making sure that you're communicating your message to your constituency and hoping to earn their vote. And the challenges, honestly, being a woman of color, an immigrant woman, you know, this two-edged sword where, you know, my skill set, my experience, my education, everything is looked at from a perspective of, well, what do you know? You know, are you even qualified? And then also another challenge is you know, making sure that having a strong team. And luckily for me, I have a strong team that really has, you know, sacrificed a lot to make sure that, you know, this campaign is on track and this campaign has achieved what it laid out to do.
Huda Hesle is a Kenyan-American who is running for District 38A of the Minnesota House of Representatives on the Democratic Party ticket. She spoke with U.S. Abdul Shakur Abu, who is in Minnesota covering the election. U.S. elections can have far-reaching consequences and are watched closely by the rest of the world. Kate Butler spoke to analysts about what a win by either presidential candidate Kamala Harris or Donald Trump could mean for Africa.
On Tuesday, U.S. voters go to the polls in a tight race between the Republican and Democratic presidential candidates, former President Donald Trump and current Vice President Kamala Harris. Whoever the superpower chooses as its next president has global implications, affecting other economies, foreign conflicts, and even personal freedoms, analysts told VOA.
Out that as Americans vote, they're aware that whatever decision they make, it's going to determine the future for not only America, but the rest of the world.
That was South African independent political analyst Asanda Ngosheng. She says whoever wins could usher in policies that affect ordinary people oceans away in Africa.
How we engage with issues of termination of pregnancy, how we engage with issues of LGBTI rights, how we engage with issues of race and racism will be determined by this election, not just for America, but for everyone else and everywhere else in the world.
Ngosheng was referring to the abortion issue because that's a divisive topic for Republicans and Democrats in the U.S. While the U.S. is the largest funder of global reproductive health programs, Trump slashed that funding during his presidency by extending a policy that barred U.S. aid from going to any organization that supported abortion. Experts believe that a second Trump presidency would likely see that happen again and could also negatively affect PEPFAR, the U.S.'s key HIV/AIDS program. Aside from health and human rights, trade is another key area where analysts think Harris and Trump would differ, given Trump's America First policy. African governments are hoping the U.S. will next year renew the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, a Clinton-era policy that gave countries duty-free access to the U.S. market. Here's Ray Hartley, Research Director of South African think tank the Brentos Foundation.
I think that a Trump presidency would reinforce America's isolationist approach in international affairs, and that might not be good for trade.
But other analysts think that whichever candidate wins, general U.S. policy toward Africa won't differ radically. They say while Africa was often neglected in terms of U.S. foreign policy, that has shifted in recent years amid renewed competition on the resource-rich continent with Russia and China. Moscow has strengthened military ties with many African governments, while U.S. troops have been kicked out of Niger and Chad. Beijing, meanwhile, is Africa's largest trade partner and has been building infrastructure throughout the continent. Here's Ebenezer Obadare, Senior Fellow for Africa Studies at U.S. research organization, the Council on Foreign Relations.
Insofar as the United States is intent on competing with those powers in Africa, keeping its old alliances and building new ones, I don't think one administration is likely to differ much from another, strictly in terms of the Africa policy.
As Vice President, Harris traveled to the continent, where she pushed President Biden's line that the U.S. was all in on Africa. The Biden administration also started holding an annual U.S. African Leaders Summit. And as it ups competition with China, the current administration has also undertaken funding the biggest U.S. infrastructure project in Africa in generations, the Lobito Corridor, a railway connecting Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo that will be used to transport critical minerals. But Biden was forced to reschedule a promised visit to Africa and is now expected in Angola in December. The country choice has been criticized by some for what they say is Angola's shoddy human rights record. For his part, former President Trump's signature initiative involving the continent was creating Prosper Africa, a U.S. agency designed to assist American companies doing business in Africa. However, he also offended many Africans during his first term, using a derogatory term to refer to countries on the continent and mispronouncing Namibia's name. More recently, he raised ire by comparing himself to South African icon Nelson Mandela. Analysts say while both Harris and Trump have generally ignored Africa over the course of their campaigns, whoever becomes America's next president would do well to keep up engagement with the continent, which boasts the world's youngest population. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with some basketball news. The draws for the 2025 Road to Basketball Africa League West Division Elite 16 took place on Saturday at the FIBA Africa headquarters in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. The draw followed the conclusion of the group phase played in Tripoli, Libya, Douala in Cameroon, Harare in Zimbabwe, and Kibaha in Tanzania. The 8-team qualifier would take place at the Palais du Sport Churchville in Abidjan from Tuesday, November 5th to Sunday, November the 10th. The competition consists of a round-robin system where teams will play a combined 16 games. Teams were divided into two or four teams each, and those that finish in the top two places of each group will advance to the semifinals, where the winners will qualify for the 2025 Basketball Africa League. Staying with basketball, seven clubs from FIBA Africa Zone 3 are set to slug it out in Pinesville City on the outskirts of the Liberian capital, Monrovia, for two tickets to the final round of the 2024 Women's Basketball Africa League. The games are billed for the Samuel Kenyon Doe Sports Complex Basketball Gym from November the 5th to the 10th. This year's Zone 3 Women's Basketball League Africa qualifiers promises to be full of excitement, especially with a marked improvement from the last edition in Abuja, Nigeria 2023 that had only three teams in attendance. This time around, there will be a robust battle of teams ready to give their best shot for a place in Dakar, Senegal in December. And now to athletics, where Kenya's Sheila Chipkuri won the New York Marathon women's title in her race debut on Sunday, capturing the crown in a time of 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 35 seconds. Helen Obiri, the 2023 New York Marathon winner and Olympic bronze medalist, was 14 seconds back in second, with Vivian Cheruiyot completing a Kenyan podium sweep in 2 hours, 25 minutes, 21 seconds. Chipkuri, who set an impressive marathon personal best of 2 hours, 17 minutes 29 seconds in Valencia in 2022, showcased her strength on the demanding New York course as she upstaged Obiri for the title in her first time of asking in the streets of the Big Apple. That does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, November 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you we'll have a great week.
Presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.